Well, not coming to you with the greatest of news tonight, folks. This is Matt Minnick here with Michael Rogner on the Tomahawk Nation Hoops Dedicated podcast. After Florida State had a tough loss against Duke, 70-65, up on Big Monday in Cameron Indoor. Here we are, February 10th. So Florida State falls to 20-4 on the season and 10-3 in ACC play. It was a hard fought game. Neither team really. Duke had that had a 10-point lead maybe early in the first half, but really for most of the second half it was nip and tuck the entire way, and ultimately Duke found a way to make play enough plays to win the game. Why don't we jump ahead? And let me say this, folks: if you are not a fan of talking about the referees, you should probably skip ahead 5 to 8 minutes of this podcast. I don't see how it's possible to talk about this game without talking about the refs at the end. But if that is something that is bugging you, then just go ahead and skip ahead to when we're talking about Trent and Vernon Carey and some others. But Michael, what walk us through the end there, that the last, 20 seconds of the game there, what happened?
Yeah, I appreciate you jumping right to the elephant in the room, which is, obviously the refs. They really made their presence known in this game. That, that last play where Matthew Hurt, first he fouls
Patrick Williams. It was really a wrestling move.
Yeah, and then he gets the rebound, then he elbows Trent right in the face, and of course the refs completely bail the fouling team out by calling the in the cylinder. I mean, you can call a lot of things in that situation, but don't just make up one that is.
Can you explain what the like in? I had actually some texts from several friends right after the game who didn't quite follow that rule. Do you have
So in the cylinder just means that the offensive player is entitled to a certain amount of space. It's not a lot of space. So when you're guarding him, you can't just get up chest to chest and chin to chin. You've got to give him the room to be the cylinder, they call it, so that he can actually make a basketball move.
This is not the cylinder of the basket, like offensive goaltending.
Right. It's the cylinder of the player. So it's calls like that, that kind of that consistently happen in Duke games for whatever reason that give people maybe that aren't just ACC fans but are just basketball fans tuned into the game. It's calls like that that kind of give the impression that Duke gets all the calls. I'm not one of these people who think that they do. They get a lot of calls, obviously, because it's refs are terrible and they want to hear the home crowd cheer. But, in this case is this came like 30 seconds after just a totally egregious review when they went to review to see who the ball was out on. And Anthony Plight clearly had 2 feet out of bounds when he touches the ball, and they still awarded the ball to Florida State. And that's after like a 2-minute review. It's this completely unnecessary review, and they still get the call wrong. Like, that's how bad these refs are. And at this point in the game, or this point in college basketball, I've come to expect this, and it's super frustrating, and I'm tired of talking about it. And I know that the problem is that I know that the NCAA is going to do nothing to address the problem. I just don't really have that much to add. I don't think that Florida State got screwed. Florida State got screwed on that one play for sure. But I think for the game, I don't think that Florida State got screwed. So, Matt, I don't know if maybe you have a more level-headed thoughts or unlevel-headed thoughts on how the rest of the game went. But I think I'll leave my comments there.
I think it's very frustrating to watch. So first of all, the particular call that we're talking about in the cylinder, it's very frustrating to watch guys like Fiondu Cabangeli and Chris Cumaji get called for multiple flagrant fouls in the last couple of years on plays in which they've grabbed a rebound and tried to exert their space, and because they're big, their elbow hits somebody, and those get called flagrant. And then, honestly, I think what is most troubling to me about this particular one at the end of the game is that not only was there a call, but there wasn't a review. I think it's very frustrating to not even, you know, you have a coach who is top five all time in ACC wins, and frankly, it's more than the 354 that's shown there because of that bullshit about, you know, I think Ryan Reed attended a couple classes of one of those music history classes that ended up getting Bobby a lot of wins taken away. And Hamilton had 22 wins taken away for a guy that wasn't – I'm not even sure Ryan Reed did anything wrong. But it's frustrating that you have a coach asking for a review and is not – the referees don't spend the time to go over and say, you know what, a guy lost his contact. We should see if he got hit in the face. So that is – that fucking sucks. But I thought the game was ref pretty. I was actually sitting with a guy. I was at Island Wing with quite a few folks, and one of them actually is a referee. And for the most part, we were talking about how it was ref fairly. I don't want to say well, but fairly evenly for most of the game until so. Duke picks up a foul with 10:31 to go in the second half. It's their eighth foul. And at this point in time, Florida State was clearly the more aggressive team, and they were the more aggressive team because they simply couldn't shoot. They one of their worst shooting performances of the year, you know, two Mondays in a row, by the way, where they've shot really poorly coming off a Saturday game. So something seems to be going on there. And so Duke has a foul at the 10:31 mark. Duke picks up one foul the rest of the game, and it's with a minute 56 to go. So they had one foul in the final 10:31, and that one foul came 9 minutes after the previous one. I think what is most concerning is that the ref I was sitting with said, you know, and actually Aria Masudi said, you know, I have a bad feeling that they're going to start to even out these calls because refs go to the monitor during timeouts and ask the stat people, hey, what are the foul calls? What are the foul calls? And so when it was 8-3 on foul calls, they multiple people, I'm concerned that they're going to try to even this out. And that is not how college basketball, that's not how a sport should be reffed. The goal should not be to have even foul calls, which in the second half, they actually did end up even foul calls. The goal of the sport should be to call the calls as the rule. And if one team is being more aggressive and getting hacked at the rim, then that is what their reward is. So I'm with you. It's tough. It's tough to see people bad at their jobs not really be held accountable. It's tough to see the NCAA not do anything about it. And it's tough that you can be sitting next to people who predict something's going to happen like that, and it happens. Now, I don't think that's why Florida State lost. And maybe we should just end the conversation there and move on to why they lost. But, you know, nonetheless, I think that if you're Trent Forrest and you just had your contact knocked out, you'd like to think that there could be a review at least to see if there was an elbow to your face. And I'm not even sure that Matthew Hurt was fouled, honestly. I don't know that he got touched other than his elbow being touched by Trent Forrest's face. But you know, Florida State did a lot of other things poorly. So why don't we move on and start there? What stood out to you as kind of like, man, they missed their chances? Because I feel like the transition game is one that jumps out to me.
Yeah, there were a couple things. First, the way the team came out, you know, was not impressive. They were clearly overamped, you know, to be in the big environment, to be playing on, you know, the Blue Devils on ESPN. We had that initial shot where Malik Osborne, you know, opens the game with a three that goes in and out.
Yeah, and then I feel after like that, if that falls, the whole game might change. I know it's weird to say that, but I feel like the entire game might change if that shot falls.
Yep. Exactly. And then the very next possession, Trent takes it right into Carey's chest, draws a foul, makes a couple free throws. And I was thinking, hey, all right, we're rolling. And then there were like eight or nine, maybe even more, you know, really bad offensive possessions after that, where we were taking contested shots or just, you know, silly turnovers. It was a rough go, but you know, the team eventually did kind of get their feet under them. And you know, that's kind of typical, or not typical, but it happens a lot in big games, you know, especially on the road. You come out and you've been thinking about this thing for 48 hours and you're just ready to roll. And you know, you get a little over amped. We had talked in the previous pod about if we want to get away with the win, we're going to need our big three to have a big game, and then have one of, you know, most likely Raekwon Gray or Patrick Williams step up. And you know, that would kind of be the formula for success. Mm. Forrest, you know, played probably his best game, if not of his career, but certainly the best game since Gonzaga last year.
I was going to say maybe since Gonzaga last year.
Yeah, and Devin Vassell did not have a very good game. MJ Walker had a really bad game. Raekwon Gray, I thought, had a pretty good game, and Patrick Williams had potential for a good game and just wasn't able to capitalize. You know, so I was a little disappointed with the big three there outside of Forrest. And then obviously, you know, just all the missed shots. It's
three for 18 from three.
Yeah, you know, and a lot of them were really good looks. You know, we finished the game by missing those two wide open corner jumpers for, mm-hmm. you know, PW airballs one, and then Gray misses one. They're both wide open from the corner, the easiest shot in basketball. You know, neither of them were even close. You know, and then the free throws are kind of the same story. It's like we missed eight. I know that you can't expect to make them all, but
no, man, I'd say that making three or four more is a reasonable expectation for this team. I mean, Devin Vassell went 0 for 2 in his one trip.
Especially right after Duke beats North Carolina, because North Carolina can't make the free throws. And then Florida State comes into town. We can talk about this one more when we're talking about what went well. But, you know, I thought that Florida State pretty clearly outplayed Duke. Duke just happened to make shots, and Florida State missed. And, you know, that's what happens. Sometimes you just got to tip your cap. They went 7-17. Jordan Goldwater. We joked about this on the pod. Like, you know, we were trying to pick the most unlikely person to go nuts from three. Yeah. And, of course, it's the guy that we were joking about who coming into tonight had made more than one three in a game three times in his career, and he's a junior. So shout out to Jordan Goldwire for having your game, for getting yours on in a big game.
Jordan Goldwire had only made a three. This is, like you say, he's a junior. This season, he'd only made a three seven other games coming into this game. Like, forget making multiple threes. He hadn't even made a three in two thirds of the game they've played. He went 3 for 3.
Yeah.
So.
My other favorite stat from the game, which actually has no bearing on this conversation or the game, so forgive me, but Jordan Goldwire is a junior. Cassius Stanley is a freshman. They are the exact same age.
Yeah.
Again, I don't know how this stuff works, but
yeah, that's like you said, no bearing. But needless to say, Cassius Stanley is probably gone after this year, because if he stays another year, he'll already be old by NBA standards. I was disappointed in. I was disappointed in Devin, and I'll tell you what, it's not that I – look, sometimes you're not on, right? Devin went 4 for 12. He missed some looks that he normally makes. But, you know, he still grabbed, you know, six rebounds and actually played pretty good defense. He had several weak side blocks that were impressive. You know what, though? He didn't – you talk about those 8 or 10 possessions early in the game. None of those possessions came with Devin Vassell touching the basketball. I think it was – 6 or 7 minutes in before he even took a shot. And when you're the guy coming in that is being talked about as kind of the, you know, the best player that no one's talking about, and, you know, first round draft pick and stuff, you got to get a shot up in the first 5 or 6 minutes of the game. And it doesn't matter if it goes in. You have to let the other team know that you are confident and ready to play the game. So that was frustrating to me. And then Patrick Williams, look, the kid played aggressive, and he did have three steals. So, you know, his defensive presence was felt, but it just looked to me like he was not ready for the stage. And you know what? That's why you play these games. That's why, you know, it's fortunate to be able to play Duke in a situation where Florida State doesn't need to win just to make the tournament. I mean, everything's locked up already. But I hope Patrick uses this as a learning experience, because he was not his best self tonight. And as you said, when MJ was just awful, and Devin was maybe average, maybe. And you really needed someone like Patrick, who honestly, it didn't seem like they had anyone to be able to guard P-Dub, and he just wasn't able to take advantage. Yep.
Yeah, that was the disappointing part, is that, you know, you see somebody like Anthony Polite, you know, he'll drive into the paint and then he gets in there and he just kind of has nothing to do.
Right.
And it's just because he's not, you know, he's not 6'8 and explosive like Patrick Williams. And Patrick Williams, there's nobody on Duke who could guard him. There was no one. Yep, and he just did nothing with it. And
he was two
and
that's for eight.
That's part of the learning curve, is recognizing, you know, when you've got the matchup advantage, and just how to deal with it. And you know, he's a freshman; he did not deal with it well. It maybe games like this, that's probably more likely that he'll be around for his sophomore season. Who knows? It's way too early to speculate about something like that. But yeah, clearly, big stage. Just not there.
And I don't want to make it seem like this was a team loss. I just want to put that out there, that when the team goes 3 for 18 from three, and when the team goes 12 for 20 from the free throw line, that's with Raekwon Evans missing two in a row, Devin Vassell missing two in a row, Patrick Williams missing a couple of, you know, ones that at the moment in the game were big, MJ Walker missing one. So it was a team loss, but you're right in that the two guys who really everyone's talking about, are they going to leave for the NBA? And they probably still could both leave for the NBA. I mean, I don't even know that this, you know, in the grand scheme of things makes that difference, but you would hope that one of Devin or Patrick would be able to take advantage of some of the opportunities they had, and combined they went 6 for 20 from the floor. So that is not good. Let's talk a little bit about what Florida State was able to do. Let's talk about that stretch when FSU's down 10, I think it was 21-11, and I feel like Trent Forrest went basically Gonzaga from last year at that point, and Florida State brings it to where it's, frankly, when they were down one at halftime, and I was honestly feeling pretty good. I'm thinking, wow, you know, you shoot like that and you're only down one at half, this seems like a game Florida State's ready to win. What was Florida State doing right in that stretch of basketball? Besides making shots.
Yeah, all right. So this is the 21-11. Is that what you, not the 11-2?
It was 21-11, and they essentially end the half on like a 22-12 run or something like that.
Yeah, and it's actually, from a defensive standpoint, it should have been better than that, because I think Florida State started that, you know, quote unquote run by missing, you know, in 5 or 6 straight possessions, and it wasn't until the Forrest steal from Goldwire that he was able to go down and make that little runner.
Yeah,
you know, and that kind of got everything started, and then Malik hits the three. We get more stops, and I think what we were seeing in that run, and as well as the earlier smaller run, is that, you know, Florida State was making it really difficult for Vernon Carey. We had talked about this in the last pod. Is FSU going to try to shut down Carey, or are they going to focus on everybody else? And they did shut down Carey. And so the way that they were able to do that, you know, they're obviously fronting the post, because we always do. And then the help side defense, the double team, was getting there while the pass was still in the air.
Yeah, which, like that time Devin Vassell knocked, like, I think they did a lob into Carey, and Vassell came backside and knocked it out to Trent, like, before the pass even got to Vernon.
Yeah, and the key to that is, you know, not only good communication, you got to know who's doubling, you got to hustle when it's time. But whoever's guarding the ball, it's absolutely critical that they don't allow them to make a straight line entry pass into the post. It's either got to be a bounce pass or it's got to be a lob over the top. It's got to be something that's slow enough that the player who's double teaming can get there, while the ball is still traveling. And Florida State just did a masterful job of that, sort of freeing up some of Duke's shooters and forcing Carey to make the play to beat them. You know, they weren't going to let him catch and have any kind of room to maneuver down low. And I think he only took 5 shots for the game, which is his low of the year. He weirdly played like less than 20 minutes.
Yeah, right, he played 19 minutes. Yeah, he played 19 minutes, and you're right, he was 3 of 5.
Yeah, so he was pretty much a non-factor, and he obviously got a lot of rebounds. He does that, but the game plan that Florida State, you know, went into Duke with, they executed really well. And specifically from a defensive standpoint, you know, we held Duke below a point possession. We shut down their best player. It was just they hit threes and Florida State didn't.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and I hate to – sometimes basketball really is that simple, especially if you watch the NBA where everybody's great, right? You think about, like, we're talking about guys like Vassell or Vernon Carey and Patrick Williams. Like, are they going to leave and go pro? And I'll tell you what, Vernon Carey's definitely leaving. He's definitely a lottery pick. These guys are, you know, here's the thing about NBA players is that everyone on an NBA team is an NBA player, and they were all really damn good. And so a lot of times it does just come down to shots, who can make shots. And tonight felt, you know, it kind of had that Elite Eight feel. Like it, I don't know that Duke's going to be a 1 seed, and I don't know that Florida State's going to be a 2 seed, but it felt like one of those games that was an Elite Eight game between a 1 and a 2 seed, or maybe a 2 and a 3 seed. And two talented teams that, quite frankly, like you said, Florida State probably outplayed Duke, but Duke just made shots. Let me ask you a couple of hypothetical questions here. It's not like a buy and sell per se, but along those lines, just, you know, gut reaction, quick response. If I told you that Florida State had 16 steals, not generated 16 turnovers, 16 live ball steals, how many points would you have expected off those steals?
Oh, probably 20, 22. Somewhere in there, up to 25 maybe.
Yeah, and I think I want to say Florida State ended the game with these instant podcasts are always tricky because not everything's updated, but ended the game I think with 15 points off turnovers in general, not just steals, just 15 points off turnovers.
And that kind of goes back to what I was saying about Florida State outplayed them. You know, Florida State, if they just shoot average from three, if they shoot average from the free throw line, if they just have an average game in live ball turnovers, you know, that Florida State's up 12 with like 3 minutes to go.
Right.
You know, that it was just one of those games where you can scheme all you want as a head coach, but if the players are the ones who have to knock down the shots and you can't coach them through it, they just got to do it. And Florida State was not able to
listen.
To,
I thought to do the that. scheme and Trent Forrest were both brilliant. You know, Trent was the KenPom MVP, which happens for the losing team. Not often. I think this is the second time this year I've seen the losing team have the MVP. I mean, Florida State created a steal on 22% of the possessions, Michael. They blocked 20% of Duke's twos. Those are absurd numbers. And they shot 60% from the free throw line, 16% from three, and 45% from the field. Yeah.
Yeah. The last time Duke turned the ball over at that rate, it was 2007. Brian Zubac,
29.6% rate that they turned it over.
The famous Brian Zubac team.
Yeah,
Greg Paulus, Josh McRoberts, all those fun guys. Yeah, that was the last time. So it's been 13 years since Duke turned the ball over the way that they did against Florida. You know, Florida State just had them rattled. Trey Jones had 5 turnovers. They had an impossible time getting just anything going.
They couldn't get into their offense.
Yeah, they couldn't. It was basically they were scramble shots and
step back,
you know, kicker. Yep. And then if we would not have fallen for every Matthew Hurt pump fake, it probably the game might have, you know, gone a little more well in our favor. But
yeah, tip of the cap to Hurt. He made 2 for 3 from deep and 6 for 6 from the free throw line, and those were all pretty big. So here's another hypothetical then. I know what the KenPom said coming into this game, and I understand what the Vegas line said coming into this game. But looking at the way our athletes match up with their athletes, and I will say, despite MJ Walker being a total no-show, this was the first game in a while that we've had everybody healthy and able to play our lineup. If Florida State and Duke were playing, you know, next week on 3 days rest and a neutral court, and I don't mean Greensboro, I mean a neutral court, who do you put your money on?
Yeah, you asked me this a week ago, and it's pretty clear that it's Duke. You know, there are no moral wins in college basketball. We needed to beat Duke. We weren't able to do that. But coming off the sort of second half dismantling of Miami and then a really good effort against Duke, just didn't make the shots. You know, that's three halves of basketball where our team was in really good position to outscore the other team. They outplayed Duke. They outplayed Miami, just crushed Miami in the second half. And so I'm way more bullish on this team right now than I was a week or two ago. And you can see that it's the middle of February now. You know, maybe the team is starting to make that turn, especially if they're healthy, that they can play with anybody. You know, and I, despite our lofty ranking of being when we were fifth in the country, you know, I never had that feeling that we could play with anybody. I mean, obviously we can, you know, on a given night, you know, we
sure can anybody anything. Can shoot 13 of 26 from three, and you can play with anybody.
Yeah, but. But I would not have thought we could play Duke 10 times on a neutral court and beat them 5 times. And I definitely, you know, feel that way now that if we were to play Duke again in a week, then I certainly like our chances to beat them.
Yeah, I think it's interesting what a week of so this team looked healthy to me tonight. There was nobody that, you know, felt like they were had a lingering issue despite playing on Saturday. We've got, you know, 5 days off now before playing Syracuse this coming Saturday. And, you know, Syracuse always has that pesky 2-3 zone, although Ham and Stan Jones have played it since their Big East days, and they have perfected the scheme to how to shred it. But I am with you that this is the best three consecutive halves of basketball in terms of executing the game plan that I've seen Florida State play this year. They went into halftime at Miami up 3, made some adjustments, tinkered, and came out and blew them out of the building in the second half, and then came into Duke and shot extremely poorly while Duke shot really well, right? Duke, it wasn't just that Florida State shot poorly. Duke was above average from 3, way above average from the free throws, and really we're a missed flagrant call at the end away from overtime. So this was an encouraging three halves of basketball. I thought Trent Forrest was magnificent. I just want to read his stat line just to be able so that if you know whoever is listening, maybe they weren't able to catch the game. He played 32 minutes. He only fouled once in that 32 minutes, despite racking up 8 steals. That's a career high for him. And also, if you caught the game on ESPN, the most ever by an opponent in Cameron Indoor Stadium, ever, as in the history of Cameron Indoor Stadium. So he 18 points, 9 rebounds, 4 assists, 8 steals, a block, and only 2 turnovers. He was 6 of 6 from the free throw line when the rest of the team was terrible. I mean, the rest of the team shot 6 of 14. Trent was 6 of 6. And really, he just did whatever he wanted to do to Trey Jones. And I'm not sure that Trey Jones has experienced that kind of onslaught and pressure in his career. So if Trent Forrest is playing like that, what is the ceiling? And if you just give average shooting, what is the ceiling for Florida State in March?
Yeah, that was an amazing game by Trent. I appreciate you jumping to that, because there's no way that we could talk about it enough about just how good he was. Also keep in mind that a lot of the ACC media, this is probably the one game, maybe one of two games that they're actually going to watch Florida State play. And so Trent has 8 steals. So you can think that his chances of making the ACC all defensive team this year are pretty good. Having a good game and when they're actually watching. And he also passed Bob Sura, we should note, for 3rd all time at Florida State in steals. That's pretty strong. Only Charlie and Delvon Arrington are ahead of him now. But if we get, you know, some version of Trent like that, it's, you know, I think back to that, you know, the game last year where, you know, against Gonzaga, where we had just nothing.
Half the team was hurt. Right.
Yeah, half the team was hurt. Kofor was out. He'd just gone through that whole, you know, the just lots of bad things were happening, and Trent Forrest was just crazy good. You know,
well, Trent saw that the season was ending, right? Like this was the last game of the season.
Yeah, and so, you know, it's clear that he has he has another gear. I'm not sure, you know, how often he can turn it on or how easy that is. But if Florida State is going to make a run in March, whether that be the ACC tournament or the NCAA tournament, you know, and Trent is playing like that, then I think that we have pretty good chance of you know, a return to Sweet 16, Elite 8 type team. And, you know, if he's getting some help around him from some of those guys who are leaving for the NBA, then, you know, who knows? This is a crazy year in basketball. So there's not a lot of teams that can just automatically chalk up a win against a team like Florida State. So, you know, I like our chances in the postseason if Trent is, you know, locked in and, you know, playing like he was tonight.
Yeah, no, I don't think that Devin Vassell is going to play that poorly in most games. I think that if you told – and when I say play this well, Trent Forrest is not going to have 8 steals in every game, because that's – I mean, that's just absurd. But if Trent Forrest is able to impose his will on the other team like he did against Gonzaga, when that – I mean, they could – it didn't matter what the hell they tried. He was getting to the rim and scoring. Particularly in that second half. And that was on a toe that needed to be surgically repaired in the offseason. So if he is able to impose his will like he did tonight, and I am pretty confident that, first of all, we're not playing Duke most games. Like, even in the NCAA tournament, you know, your second round game is not going to be an opponent against Duke-level competition, right? Like, we're going to be a 3 seed, a 4 seed. So I would be willing to put a decent amount of money right now on that we would be a Sweet 16 team with that Trent Forrest, and I would even say, you know, the odds in our favor of being an Elite 8 team. And once you get to the Elite 8, you know, that at that point it's just, hey, it's a one game season to get to the Final Four. Here's my one concern, and so maybe the conversation is about Raekwon Evans, who looked okay, but a little bit out of his element. I'm glad he got this experience. He was okay. But in conference play this year, Trent Forrest is playing 82% of the minutes in conference-only play. Now, he is number one in steal rate. Throw that out there. At almost 5%. Crazy high. He is now starting to draw some of the foul. You know, we've talked about, for some reason, like, he's not getting the free throw line as much, but he, at least after the last couple of games, he's got that up over 30, his free throw rate, and he's shooting 88% from the free throw line. He hasn't done as well from 3 in conference play as he did a little bit earlier in the season, but is he playing too many minutes? Hamilton talked about against Miami, he intentionally only gave him 20-25 minutes because he's been playing him too much. He needs others to step up. Are you concerned about the minutes for Trent Forrest moving forward?
Yeah, he's absolutely playing too much. But at this point, that's what it is. He's got 7 games left in the regular season of his college career. And I know that you can't just will it to go out and play 40 minutes a night, especially, at the defense that
– Yeah, unless you need Tony Douglas, right?
Right. The effort that Florida State has put forward on defense, it's just impossible to play that much. But, Florida State does not have another option. So the way that you steal minutes, in these final 7 games and then whatever we play in the ACC tournament is by blowing out the opponent so that he doesn't have to be on the court. There's just really not any other option. It's not ideal. You don't want them tired at the end of the games. You don't want them risking injury. You don't want any of those things, but that's where this team is, right now with a couple months left in the season. So I just don't see any way around it. He's going to continue to play over 30 minutes in every game that really matters.
So where can we've got Syracuse on Saturday. And then after that, it's Pitt, NC State, Louisville. By the way, the NC State Louisville game is a third Saturday Monday turnaround. Clemson, Notre Dame, Boston College. Where are you trying to steal some Trent Forrest minutes there? I mean, do you think Syracuse on Saturday can you get them under 30?
Yeah, I think Syracuse is a good game just because it's such an awkward style. We don't face that zone hardly ever.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know that he's the best player for it anyways, to be honest, but
yeah, you're not driving into the zone. I mean, that's not how you beat them. And it's a lot of crisp ball movement, having guys in the right position. So that's probably a game where we can steal some minutes. And then Pitt, if we're going to have a double digit lead for all of the second half of any ACC games left, it's going to be Pitt or Boston College.
Pitt or BC, both at home.
Yeah. So we have to just get out to a big lead in those games and let Raekwon Evans kind of do his thing. I don't see that happening against, on the road against NC State or Louisville, maybe against Clemson, I kind of don't see it against Notre Dame. So,
They've won 4 straight. They're playing better.
Yeah, and Clemson, it's Clemson, and
they always muck it up,
right?
Muck up the game, not Trent Forrest. But yeah, I'm with you. I'd like to see honestly Trent under 30 minutes in both Syracuse and Pitt. I think you've got a Saturday Tuesday coming up. Both games you should be favored by at least 7 or 8 points. And I think that if Florida State shoots well at home, we've talked about that before. They're not going to go 3 for 17, 2-3 games in a row. I'd like to see Florida State come out, get a lead at halftime and enable Trent to sit on the bench and give him some rest coming up into what you accurately said. I don't think that at NC State is ever going to be – going on the road in Tobacco Road is never going to be easy. And then, of course, you come home for the game against Louisville, which is going to be just a championship fight. So I do think that we need to find a way to get him some minutes against Syracuse and Pittsburgh. Do you – if you're Hamilton, are you okay with a loss, let's say, at Notre Dame – if it means that you didn't kill your guys, because let's kind of zoom out here, right? Like this loss to Duke, in my mind, means 2 things. Tell me if I'm wrong. Any hope that anyone had for winning the ACC regular season is out. Florida State is 10-3 now. They're a couple games behind Louisville. Louisville has a pretty easy schedule. They're a game behind Duke plus the tiebreaker behind Duke, and Duke has a pathetically easy schedule left. So is that right? Like there is not a chance, and there is a chance, but it is unrealistic that Florida State wins the ACC regular season. Is that right?
Yeah, that's pretty much out the window.
Okay. So number 2, any chance that anybody out there was thinking about being a 1 seed in the NCAA tournament, that is gone.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that we could win out and I doubt we'd have the 1 seed.
There's just not enough quality victories left. I mean, I don't even know that there's more than 1 quad 1 win left on our schedule. You know what? At Notre Dame is probably quad 1.
Yeah.
That's it. And
then we'd have to go through Duke and Louisville in the ACC tournament to pick up big wins.
Yeah. So I do think that a two seed, I think that, you know, you beat Louisville, basically you went out and, you know, make the championship game or something in the ACC tournament. I do think a two seed is on the table. That would put you at, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. I'd put you at 30 wins. So I think a two seed's still on the table. Are you okay with a loss at Notre Dame or a loss at NC State? We're not going to fall out of the top four seeds in the ACC if it means that a couple guys get a little more rest.
Well, I think the way that you have to manage the season now is to make sure that you get at least a four seed in the NCAA tournament. You know, not the ACC, but the NCAA. The math really goes downhill, you know, once you get past the four seed. Mm-hmm. You know, your chances of making the Sweet 16 or the Elite Eight are not good. So ideally, we want to be a two or three seed in the NCAA, but you have to manage to be a four. So it kind of depends on you know, how these games shake out. If we take care of business against Syracuse and Pitt, you know, then
that would put us at 22-4 with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 games left in the regular season.
Right. So then you can probably, you know, drop one against NC State or Clemson or Notre Dame and still, you know, it'd be a lock for at worst a four seed in the NCAA tournament. So I think you just kind of see how it shakes out. If the Duke loss turns into two losses or three losses, you know, that's going to change the geometry. But I think, you know, at this point, you just really have to be focusing on getting that top four seed in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, I agree. I think that I feel like we've had this discussion on the boards a lot. And would you rather have an ACC tournament championship or, you know, what X, you know, Sweet 16 or Elite Eight or whatever it is? Banners are banners, right? Rings are rings. And I do think that this team is almost a lock for a top four seed in the ACC. So that means to win the tournament, to win the ACC championship, they only need to win 3 games in 3 days. I think that is eminently doable, as you just said earlier. I mean, we played Duke and Cameron and essentially outplayed them for 40 minutes and lost the game. What is your thought? If I gave you ACC tournament championship, ACC championship, but a loss in the Sweet 16, or let's say ACC semifinals, but a Final Four, what are you taking? Not a national championship, just a Final Four.
Right. Yeah. I'll take the Final Four just because it's, we did a round table.
Yeah,
we did a roundtable a couple years ago, and one of the questions was, "Will Florida State make a Final Four in your lifetime?" And right. I think I was the only one who answered no. So my health is good, despite my cough. Knock on wood. But yeah, I would definitely take anything. But an ACC tournament, I would take an ACC championship over anything short of a Final Four.
Over the Elite Eight.
Absolutely. Yeah. That. Cutting down the nets in, you know, with all the ACC people in the stands and the confetti coming down. This year it's in Greensboro,
my friend.
There you go. That's a big deal. You know, Florida State had the chance to do it last year. Mm-hmm. They won 2 games in 3 days and then did not win the championship against Duke. But yeah, I would love to see another ACC title, you know, come Florida State's way, especially with this team that, you know, everybody was just thinking it's kind of a rebuild.
Yeah. No, and I think you start to string some of those together and it legitimizes you. I mean, if Florida State is in the ACC title game 1 year, wins it the next year, and let's say next year we make the title game again or something. I mean, at some point you start to be a legitimate program. So I'm with you there. Like I said, banners are banners. But, man, you know, if there's a guy that deserves the Final Four, it's – or two guys, Leonard Hamilton and Stan Jones. And with basketball as crazy as it is this year, and we'll start to talk about, I'm going to, you know, now that we're getting into this, you know, the middle part of February, I'll probably start asking some questions on these pods about March Madness and seeding more and more. But if, you know, yeah, why not? why not FSU, right? Like, I don't, there's just not a team maybe other than Baylor that really looks like they've been able to just, you know, dismiss all comers. I know San Diego State's undefeated, but, and they are good. Mount, you know, they have some good players, but yeah, why not FSU?
Yeah, they put up a stat there kind of at the, towards the end of the game that, you know, Florida State is the third winningest program in the last 4 years. And that stat got thrown around for years when it actually wasn't true because Virginia had passed us a few years ago. So yeah. Florida State was actually fourth. But Florida State is now tied with North Carolina over the past 4 years in wins. And that includes, you know, North Carolina's national championship team, includes last year's team that went 16-2. You know, so only Duke and Virginia have more wins. So, you know, legitimizing the program, you know, goes a long way especially the people that we're recruiting, some of the recruits that we've landed.
Yeah, what did Bryce McGowan say? What did he say yesterday? Yep. Why he committed?
He's coming here to win national championship.
That's for ACC and national titles, right?
Yep. Uh-huh. Yeah. Yep.
So that is the sign of a program that has been legitimized. And you know, hey, you know what? Maybe this is a sign too, is that Florida State shot woeful, and you know, really couldn't hit the side of the barn. There was a horseshit call at the end of the game, notwithstanding the fact that there was another horseshit call that benefited Florida State just previously. And you know what? Despite all that, I left feeling pretty pissed that we didn't win, right? You go into Cameron playing a top 10 team, shoot terribly, and you feel like we should have won that game. So
yeah, we had two chances to tie it in the final 2 minutes.
Yeah. So maybe there's your sign right there that it's a legitimized program, right? Yeah. All right. Well, it is almost 11 Eastern time. I'm going to go cry into the pillowcase. No, honestly, it's a good thing we did this about an hour after, because if you had caught me 10 minutes after, I mean, I know we still need to mark this explicit, but it might have been a rambling rant that Bob Knight would have been proud of. So
it could have gotten rough there, but we pulled through.
Yeah, we pulled through. I hope folks were able to withstand the initial 5 to 7 minutes of ref rant. There should be, hey, speaking of rants, we get Boeheim coming in on Saturday. So I'm going to warm up my questions, for him. I still remember when he asked me about, Atlantis, and I wasn't sure if he was talking about their fluky tournament run in the Bahamas or the mythical city, spoken about by Homer. So that should be fun.
Yeah. Boeheim, always a fan favorite. Very, very friendly guy.
Well, and now he's got his son on the team that we can ask questions about too. So, and I think he has higher expectations for him than anybody else. All right. We're going to try to come back and do another pod on later this week, do an actual preview of Syracuse. They play a 2-3 zone. They have a lot of long athletes, and Leonard Hamilton and Stan Jones can shred it by hitting the short corner. We'll see if anyone can make shots on Saturday. For Michael, I'm Matt, signing off.